Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another amazing guest who has some crazy stories to tell. She was a swing covering Jelly Lorum and Jenny Anydots on the U.S. National Tour 5. So welcome, Catherine Heaton, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you. I'm excited.
I'm excited because I know we've teased a little bit about that you went on as a swing, but there's more to that story. So we will get there. Before we get there, though, I love always hearing your history with cats before you booked the tour. So when's the first time you saw it? What was your first experience with the show?
I'd never seen it other than the video. So in my room at home, the cat's VHS, I was not really amused, but... The non-equity tour, you know, it just banged out auditions every single year at the same time every year. And I had finished my graduate degree and I was jumping in literally the pounding the pavement, you know, unofficial list transferred to the official list and all of that. I auditioned 5 times or I booked this particular tour. Get to that. What I booked it as Grisabella, honestly. And yeah, so I had high hopes of being in Phantom of the Opera. And I used to study the casting notices to see who was on the team of shows, and one of the music supervisors of Phantom, I used to help with the non-actors, and that was intention not to be in Cats, but that all changed. I became a part of the show because now it's one of my favorite shows and I'm obsessed.
I love it. So you weren't interested in this at all. It was like, I'm auditioning because I need to audition because that's, you know, you want to get to work and you're at that point in your career, so you're going to probably audition for anything. You're not a fan. You've seen the 1998 movie, wasn't amused, wasn't obsessed with it. And you almost did it as a hook to Phantom because of a musical supervisor. So I love that. And then you get booked. So that is kind of like, had you seen it at all before? Just the movie?
Just the movie and just memory, the song, you know, who hasn't recorded that in their lives? So I'm Marie, and I had, you know, known about Memory for years and what an incredible song it was. My grandmother actually was very into playing music in her house, and that was one of the songs that she always played. And just previous to auditioning for these tours, I had to sing Memory at her 90th birthday party to a karaoke track, you know, and I did it really well. So I thought, you know, I'm not... Dancer. I'm not going to be Victoria with the leg up by my ear. And, you know, everybody's like, you should audition for Grizz. Like, she doesn't hardly dance. She's on stage for 11 minutes. And I'm like, wow, this sounds great. Yeah. And she has the best song in the show. But now is the best song in the show. But I really just wanted to dress up as a cat in heels and a fur, a beautiful fur coat, and down the face and sing Memory.
So let's get into that. So you do audition for, you were booked as Grizz, but there's more to this.
Yes, after several years of auditioning and callbacks and why didn't I get it and this and that, you know, Phantom always in the forefront. I'm only like 20, at that point. But then when I actually booked it, I was 29 and one of the oldest people, which is crazy to think about now. I was one of the oldest who booked, and we started with 4 weeks of rehearsal in New York City at Pearl Studios, good old Pearl, which I love. And we had 30 minutes every morning of a warm led by the incomparable Richard Stafford, who is just an incredible man. And then we had 30 minutes of Felinity. So that was Put Your Tails On. We had rehearsal tails. Put your tails on and act like cats with each other for 30 minutes. So as a Grizz, I was actually instructed to wait in the hallway for about 15 of those minutes. And so the cats would all be with each other and having fun, fighting, this and that. And then I would, and the room, the entire mood would change. As the whole, it's very unfair, but Grizz is an outcast. And, you know, they treated her like junkyard material when she walked in the room in the show. And they tried to really hone that in. So that 3 weeks of that, and then the fourth and final week was a lot of it, but still just running the show. And long story short, I have an immense fear of heights. And very long story short, I should say, I have an immense fear of heights, and I knew of the Heaviside Layer journey this entire, and I think a lot of it, but at the same time I was really nervous about it. Fast forward, we do designer runs, we do everything at, you know, this beautiful place right near Carnegie Hall, and we fly off to China to do tech. And tech is the first place that I encounter something called the pod. And the pod is what Isabella has. She's on the tire with Old Dute, who is Nathan Morgan. He's a dear friend of mine. And we tire together. The tire raises to about, you know, half the stage level. And I was fine on that. And then I just tried so hard. I tried for a week. I cried for a week. The cast was helping me for a week. The producers were helping me for a week. Because I really wanted to be Grizabella. Really good at it. And I never got to do it. So wow. I was fired. And it was so traumatic. It was a horrible experience. It was because when you have a fear of something, first of all, there's 5,000 people who don't have that fear and they can all do it fine. All of that, you know, self esteem issue that comes along with that. And now, you know, still we're going on 12 years, still kind of is like, oh, you're the girl that happened to on Cats, right? And it's like, yes, I am. So I get sent home on a plane, and just so we're clear, everybody involved was sad about this. I say I was fired. It wasn't a firing. It was like, we are so sorry, but there is nothing we can do else to help you. They tried. I mean, the Grizz goes into that pod and there's no harness. So if you're already having a pack, you already feel the effects of that. You don't want to get into a pod that has no back and help. If you fall, if you faint, if you get scared, you're up there, say, for the whole thing of cats. So you're up there until the bow. And then that's how she takes her bow. The pod comes down, she takes her bow. So it's a good 10 minutes that you're up there, and there is a phone there's a phone where you can communicate with the stage manager, and the stage manager said, we can talk the entire 10 minutes if you want. But the reality is that I couldn't reach for the phone. So, faint. I had to make the decision that this wasn't. So that's why I'm not billed as Grisabella. I did 4 weeks of rehearsal and 1 week of tech. They let me do the whole show during tech, just not that part. Mm-hmm. And they would call me in at different times when the cast wasn't called so we could work on this. And it's not my proudest moment, but again, very long story short, the good news is 2 days later, I got a phone call from the producers being to fly me back and to change. They were going to tax, and they wanted me back. So nothing better could have happened from this than me nailing those other new tracks. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about all that if you want, but yeah, so I've technically played 3 roles in Cats, 2 on stage, 1 I was the rehearsal Grizz, I guess.
Yeah, I'm curious. I mean, that's a, first of all, it's a wild story, a crazy story. And I mean, but I would hope it's not uncommon. I mean, I feel like fear of heights is fairly common, and there's other fears that are also fairly common. And it's sometimes it's something you can't overcome. You know, it's like you said, it's like a paralyzing piece to where you couldn't even reach. I'm like trying to think through my head of like, that is a big part of the show, and it's something that they're obviously not going to want to change. And there's, I'm sure there were some workarounds, but none of them were really going. That's going to go up at the end of the show. Are there any other? I was thinking about what other things are there, because there has to be other performers that have dealt with a similar situation. And how is that, like, does that play in? Was you audition for, and like, have you thought about that moving forward?
Yes. So, first of all, the lyric in the song is up, up, up. Castle Hotel. So there was, you know, I have a dear friend who in the business, and he said, well, can't they just friggin' change the lyrics to down, down, down? And I was like, I guess not. They're not going to do that. So that was that. But then the next 2 shows that I got involved heights again in a much smaller capacity. Mm-hmm. And the producer for the next show, which Evita, you're probably like, there's no heights in Evita. The Casa Rosada, the set piece, when you're an aristocrat, you sing from up there. Obviously if you're Ava Perón, you sing from up there. I was actually, full disclosure, I was really insane that he thought that was going to even compare to going up in the lighting rig for 10 minutes by yourself. So it was kind of like a snarky, like, well, we know it was actually the same producers as Cats tour. So, you know, this guy on the phone was like, well, we know your issues. So are you going to be okay with that? And I was like, it's the first floor of a house. Like, you're standing basically on like a little balcony for 1 minute, singing with a group of people around. I never thought about it once. And then came along, and I was just hired, again, very long story, to be a quick 2-month replacement for somebody who, briefly, and I was turned into a 6-month, turned into an 8-month, then that turned into learning all different roles. And one of the roles was Madame Giry. When you go see Phantom, you probably don't think Madame Giry does a lot on a height issue, but behind the scenes, she has to climb a very tall ladder at the end of the show with Raoul when they're through the lair, and it's right before the Raoul jump where he jumps into the lair to try and find Christine, and fast, and thank gosh. But that company as well wanted me to be Madame Giry, and I was flattered. But every single day when I went to work, you age and you see how high this thing is called the Travelator. And it moves. I know we're not on video, so I can't show it, but it moves front and back, but it also moves up and down, and it slants, and it moves front and slant and front and slant and back. And you're climbing a ladder that's very tall in your costume, and then you go out onto the bridge that's moving up and down, have a very brief scene, and run off. And they approached me saying they would work with me for as long as it took. And it took over a week for me to go to the top of the ladder, then to let go of the ladder. Mm-hmm. Because as we previously talked about, I wouldn't even reach for that phone. So you come into a state of paralysis, and trust me, I've tried to work on this. Everything has been suggested to me, so I'm not just sitting my thumbs saying I have a fear of heights. This is truly debilitating. But I ended up, I mean, I've gone on for Madame Giry countless times. Mm-hmm. And I will say, though, after the Broadway shutdown, we had to redo tech things, and I had to redo that. And something about when it's in the show, it's only like a 2 minute thing that's going on, maybe five, you have to endure that. But when you're in it, it's another situation. Mm-hmm. And it was really hard.
Yeah. Is it,
to go back.
Was there a difference of like, I'm thinking about when you're on a Broadway stage, that set is there every day, not moving. You know, I don't want to say one's more or less safe than the other, because I think they're, you know, there's obviously a lot of safety precautions. I've heard some crazy stories about in Cats where the pod has gone up and crashed into the ceiling, and had other things on a cruise or on other places where it's not, it's moving almost every day. So does that, like, did you have more comfort on a Broadway stage knowing that that was going to be there every day versus a tubing every couple days?
Yeah, no, I mean, on Broadway, we had issues with this, set piece. Let's just say that. I mean, it's been there since 88.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a different thing. Like, you're not suspended in air by yourself, in the lighting rig. You're not at risk for a crash. It's more like you have to climb the ladder, then you have to let go and let Raul climb the ladder, and then you go out on the bridge together. So my first Raul, he was like, if you need to death grip my back or my arm just till we get out there on the bridge, like, because once you get out, you're screaming and there's a fast scene. And the bridge is actually in motion coming down by the time the scene starts. So, mm-hmm. The answer to that is, I guess I feel better on Broadway, but only in this situation. I mean, there accidents happen all the time when a lot of shows.
Yeah. And Cats is a historically, like, physically accidental, demanding and heavy injury type of show.
Yes.
So yeah. You do go back and use Joey and Jenny, right?
Yeah. While I remember getting the phone call, and I'm not a dancer. I do not bill myself a dancer. When I'm in a audition, I mean, it's an audition that I produce, but I just keep laughing. And then actually by the end of the rehearsal period, I'm like, kicking, turning, jumping, all of the above. I love it. And that's actually what I end up missing from shows when I leave the show. So, but I had to learn, it wasn't my first time understudying, but it was my first time at this type of level. Mm-hmm. And we were in, like I said, bathrooms. We were in a museum at school. We were in a coffee room. We were in any sort of situation that, this is all last minute too. They weren't planning to have these rehearsals. And, you know, it took a few weeks, and I went on for the first time at the most beautiful Majestic Theater in San Antonio, Texas. I don't know if any of our fall in there, but it is to die for. I just went on and I did amazing. I was jelly and it was incredible. Like it was wild. And then after, kind of forget where you went on, but I remember the first time for that.
We're going to tour some messages from our sponsors and then we'll be back for more of The Wrong Cat Died.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
I want to now pivot a little bit because you said in the beginning that you weren't a fan of the show, or I don't know, it wasn't your thing compared to your Phantom, I'm Ready to Go On. But then now it sounds like you are part of the Jellicle family for life. So how did that, like, where did that moment come where all of a sudden you said, okay, this is actually for me. I love it. This is a great show.
I think it's when I went on as Jelly for the first time, because I never got to go on as Grizz. And I actually, as I said before, Grizz is an outcast. You spend most of the show alone anyway. So in a way I'm truly blessed to me because I still remember people in the cast when I got to go on, like I'm getting sad, happy, just thinking about the friendship and emotional connection when you're part of, as we call it. And that pivoted everything for me because you know, I was, when you're in Cats, you're like, you're in, I also thought it was amazing that you never had to just in the unitard and I only had to add on for the opera, like the white puppy and the long gloves and the hat. But other than that, you're just in the show and come as you are and you're all over the floor with these people. It also expanded my capacity as a performer like nothing else ever has. I mean even when they called me to come back down to North Carolina to open the show as somebody else, I said, are you serious? Like I said, you know how, like, I how long it's going to take me to learn this. And they were like, we don't care, we want you. And also, when you're a swing in Cats, you sing every night. You sing the show every night, which I think, technically, I think every show should do that, just saying, because it's an amazing experience and you're still part of the show every single night. So to answer your question, it was the community that was created around me learning these new tracks and being in the booth, as we call it, every night with the other swings and learn. I mean, it's Cats is a whole body experience, you know, and it just changes you. There's nothing, I cannot think of anything else like it. Nothing.
Yeah. I'm curious if the entire like rehearsal process, they almost trained the Cats to have some animosity towards you. Like, you weren't in the Felinity School for this. You weren't part of that. And then when you come back, you're now on the other side of that. Was there a transition period with the cast of where they kind of had to remove your Grizzabella to accept your Jelly and Jenny? Like, what was that? Was that hard for them?
No, This is what I'm saying. I remember, like, I'm seeing it right now in my head. So the way that the producers handled my coming back was a secret to the cast.
Oh,
because they told me on the phone that everyone was, they said the morale is really low, and they I guess they lied to the cast, and they said they were flying to New York to do auditions, because this is before like virtual auditions. Mm-hmm. They were flying to New York to do a quick audition of like people that were in callbacks before for the they bumped the cover up to Grizz, who was, her name was Melissa, and she was incredible, and she should be doing it 8 times a week and could do it 8 times a week, and she was great. So they bumped her up. So now they needed a swing, and they bumped the swing. So they had 2 female swings. They bumped 1 to Grizz and 1 to Jelly. So now they needed the swing. And they said that they were going to New York to audition, you know, people who were in callbacks before. And that person that they hired someone, and that person was going to join the cast tonight. And I was, and they said that nobody knew a thing except, you know, the music and the dance and the producers. And I walked in, it was this auditorium, like a school auditorium, a college in Hamlet, North Carolina. And they were like, this is our new swing. They didn't say the name. And they opened the door, and I walked in, and people were like, people jumped, people screamed, people, like, it was like on Price is Right. When you win at the end, like, I mean, it was like, honestly, it was the best feeling that I have ever felt. And there was no need to go into that. I think it actually just, you know, the reversal of roles. There was no, everybody was just so happy that this is how it was turning out.
Yeah, that has to be, you know, like, it is a family, and you go through a lot together. To have it end kind of abruptly. And so I'm sure everyone was like beyond thrilled to find a way to have you there.
Yeah. And, you know, but it was like, oh, okay, now I'm going to be on stage for 2 hours versus 11 minutes. So I better get, you know, eating my salads and everything like that. I mean, from a performer's perspective, it is a totally different vibe than being Grizz. Like,
yeah, you get a very short period with Grizz, and you go on and you belt, and but everybody else is on there almost the entire time, and you dance a 11-minute ball sequence and everything in between. There's like very few moments when you're not on stage, and so it is a completely different show almost compared to what, you know, the Grizzbella track.
Yeah, and even when you're like lying down on stage, you end up somehow being choreographed into a crunch and like a V or some sort of Pilates move. Like, you can't just lay down on stage. It's got to be perfect, you know? And it, that was just something, like I said, it's a whole body experience. I was not ready for that. I'm going to be honest. Like, I thought I'd be smoking my Grizz cigarette, you know, and having the morning after look and, you know, being fabulous glamour cat in the junkyard. And that was not the case.
Yeah.
No, as a swing, you have to be ready all the time. So that was the other thing, is you have to be ready to go on in perfect, or perfect for you, near perfect condition at any time. So that was another mindset shift that was a little anxiety provoking, but it turned out fine.
Yeah. Did you ever go on for an injury like mid-show?
No.
Okay.
No.
That's the part of swings I can't fathom. It just seems so crazy to be, I guess you at least in catch, you're in the booth and you're singing, but to be just sitting there and then all of a sudden quickly throwing on and jumping in the second act just to me sounds insane.
Yeah, we used to, I think we went to the booth in pin curls, and so every day we were kind of prepped, and then we used to have to do quizzes on how fast you could do your makeup just in case.
Wow.
If that did happen, I would have 8 minutes. I remember 8 minutes in my head right now. I would have 8 minutes to go on. So they would either, if it's a part that is critical to the next song, I think they would hold the show. If it wasn't critical to the next number, they would allow, you know, the person to be out, and then the new cat's going to come in. And it, you know, my experience, it was non-union, so there wasn't any of this, like, having to announce your name and all of that.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about theories and backstories. What, you know, you played and rehearsed for three of the characters. What are some of the backstories that you had to create for yourself to get through kind of like, hey, this is Jenny's story, this is Joey's story. What were your theories you made up?
Yeah, and they're all so different. So the Grizz one is that I had time for that. Mm-hmm. I had time to think of her and develop her and really, you know, obviously I'm not the same. I wasn't the same age. You know, Grizz is kind of dated, but I had some life experiences, as I think a lot of actors have, where you felt like an outcast growing up at your school. You were made fun of. I just felt like a lot of the Grizz stuff was very easy for me to tap into. I am pretty dark in my thoughts, and I sang it that way too. And I remember the music supervisor saying I had never heard these songs sung this way. Hmm. You know, like her opening part is called Remark, mm-hmm. the cat. And, you know, I had so much pain in my voice. And that's really the only, other than not being able to do the pod, that was the only regret that I had, is that I never got to share that. Mm-hmm. Like I have gone through some stuff and I let it fly. I let it rip in the character of Grizz. She was just so relatable to me, and I know that sounds really dark, but, I felt very connected to her, and maybe someday I will get to share that backstory, at another theater that possibly uses stairs or something else. So if you're out there, call me.
Yeah.
And then for Jenny and Jelly, first of all, I have never played like a happy, fun character. I play these dark, usually older women, and you know, like Madame Giry is Grizz Madame Giry? I don't know. But these two, they're not kittens. They're not in the kitten category because we have those too. You know, Silly and Victoria and those kinds, but they were fun, and that was really hard for me. I have to be honest. Yeah. I have fun in my life, but I just, for whatever reason, I mean, my voice is darker, and so I had to learn this. I had to figure this out. And for Jenny, in my mind, she was like a cute grandma type. Like she was the fairy godmother in Cinderella.
Yeah.
Me, that was who I thought of with her. And she was just so laughable and excitable. And then Jelly, I just envisioned her as the quintessential ingenue. Another thing that I don't really connect with, but in that show, I certainly did, that her and Gus have this odd relationship, kind of like if you see an old lady crossing the street or an old man crossing the street and you want to be of service and help them, you know, that was her. Like, she's just like the sweetest, kindest person, cat out there. And, you know, it was such a mind stretcher for me to come up with these things, mm-hmm. for each cat. And then when you're a swing, you have to like switch it. Oh, tonight I'm the fairy godmother. Tonight I am, you know, the sweet girl next door. It was a really mind-blowing experience, mm-hmm. for sure.
I want to talk about one more thing before we go into the rapid fire, because I do know, you know, you've mentioned a couple times that you were, Phantom was like the end goal. And so, you know, you've been in three Andrew Lloyd Webber shows. What was, I think you said you were vacation swing to start, but what was that moment like when you got that call and you kind of had the Broadway phantom opportunity dream come to life?
So it was incredible. It was an email. I had actually given up on auditioning. I had had a string of, this is after Evita, I had had a string of callbacks go nowhere. And while I was on Evita, I will say that I went to Kinko's and I got, well, from someone in Phantom, I got the PDF score. Then I went to Kinko's in California and had it bound and made into something that I could carry around. So I'm on this other tour who also had the same music supervisor, by the way, and I'm carrying around this Phantom score. I'm learning different parts in Phantom. I'm teaching them to myself. And I let the Phantom staff who did Evita and partially did Cats know that I was learning these things. And they had seemed very impressed with me and my, you know, high soprano ability and my, you know, I get along with everybody. I have a great time in the show. And I think that really, I let them know then that, you know, Phantom was my thing, my life goal. And they called me into a bathroom in Orlando, Florida, when they were, they used to come fly out for visits, you know, to check in. And we had a 10 a.m. Saturday morning music rehearsal because they were like, we are getting this done. And before two shows, like, it's pretty unheard of. But after the music rehearsal, they come up to me and said, we'll hear you now. And I was like, now? Phantom now? And they were like, yes. So we went to some, it was like a bathroom or a dressing room closet or something. It was insane. And I just, they were like, well, what do you know? And I said, I could do Carlotta, I could do Madame Giry, I could do Magical Lasso, I could do Prima Donna. Okay, we'll hear all of that. So I was like, oh. And it's now like 11 a.m. And I'm like, okay. So the conductor from Evita, who traveled with us, William, he was amazing. William Waldrop, he played and I sang and they were very impressed with me. Well, half of them were very impressed with me and the other half was emailing the whole time. So whether or not that was about me, I highly doubt it. And then that was in March and I got this email. I left the show, the tour ended, and I got this email in October.
Wow.
So I never heard a peep after that day in the bathroom. Never said, you know, we'll think of you fondly, never said a word.
That is crazy. You had to audition in the bathroom and then hear nothing for 6 months, 7 months, what is that, you know, and then get an email saying, yeah, come to New York and come on.
So I lived in New York and you know, I've been in New York for over 20 years and I, you know, I was subletting. I had never had my own place. And I remember I was on a couch and I was just like scrolling and this email came in asking me if I would be free next January, February to cover a leave of absence at the Majestic. We'd love to have you. And I literally like, I don't know what that is about. I will say, I do want to say for the listeners, this isn't like a, I never auditioned and I got an email and I'm an overnight success. I had auditioned for Phantom of the Opera for 10 years and they never looked at me in the audition room. So I was non-act. I used to wait on the benches. I used to have to use the McDonald's bathroom in Times Square to change into my dress. Like it was really hard. And then, so it wasn't like it just fell into my lap. I had auditioned for 10 years and I had done two shows that I didn't even know about just to get closer to these people. So it shows the importance of networking and doing a good job and following up and believing in yourself, and putting in the work. So Yeah, I just can't even tell you what that was like. That experience was 8 years of my life that I look back on really fondly.
Yeah, I also think, like, you know, you said putting in the work, but you were doing another show and teaching yourself multiple parts at the same time. So it's not like you just you just stumbled into this. Like, there's an immense amount of work that went into this.
Yeah, and I, you know, I pushed my voice too. You know, when I auditioned for Cats, like, I was a mezzo in my head. I was a mezzo in college. I was a mezzo. I was always, like I said, the old lady or the friend or the sidekick. And I didn't know until I became this swing in Cats that, I mean, Jelly and Jenny in the booth have to sing high D's. And I have high D's, but I didn't know I did. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, oh my gosh, I'm even more right for Phantom now. And then that I, for 8 years, that's what I sang there, unless I was going on as Jiri. And that was like so much fun to do that. That was like vocal vacation compared to these crazy opera notes that were happening.
Yeah. Yeah, you picked very easy, simple shows to be a part of, with Cats is 2.5 hours of dancing and singing, and then this extremely operatic Phantom.
Yeah.
Well, let's go into the rapid fire. If you could play any cat for one night, who would you want to go on as?
Old Dute.
Old Dute. Give me some why.
Well, the Old Dute of the old days, when, like, during intermission, he did sit there for the whole intermission, but I think in the old days on Broadway, they used to, like, let kids come up, kind of like a Santa type thing. And first of all, he's the best. He's the best voice. He has these profound musical phrases, and he is just like, I don't know, he's so cool. He's the coolest to me. And then he comes out and does like a second of the ball, which is, you know, he's well-rounded, and he's loved by all women, children, kids, puppies.
I was not expecting them to stay on during intermission, and
the bathroom.
Yeah, and they were, I don't remember in 2016 if they had people going up and taking pictures. I think they did, because it was pre-COVID. Now obviously it's much harder. But
it's just so,
yeah. Okay, who are your favorite and least favorite cats?
Ooh, I would say I'm not a fan of McCavity. He can just go somewhere else for a while, except I did like singing that song about him, but I don't like him. He is a little evil and nasty. I'm over him. And my favorite is Grisabella, hands down. I mean, it's just a torch I'm still carrying. She has such an arc.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, this isn't going to be good for me. It's going to be bad for the last question, it sounds like. What is your favorite song from Cats?
Well, all right. Other than Memory, I'll try and pick another one. I love The Ball, but it doesn't involve singing.
I would count The Ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think it's, to me, the song is either a musical number or singing. It's a track on the album, in my opinion, so that I would count that.
I think Addressing, like, it is just like, for the tracks that I had, it was like high soprano power singing, standing in place for once, just like, you just give it to the audience. But I will say there's Skimbleshanks. I mean, when I found out I had to like build a train, dance, and sing at the same time. But the Jelly, I think Jenny just held something small, but Jelly had a full-on wagon wheel that she had to turn. So you have to kick the wagon wheel, hold the wagon wheel. And then Skimble is obviously, he's really cute. He might be one of my favorites too.
Mm-hmm.
I love all the songs. I'm such a loser, but I...
Such a transition.
Now I want to sing all the songs right now.
Such a transition from the you and with the 1998 VHS who didn't like it.
Angelical Cats. I think that, that might be my favorite, the opening number.
I love it. Okay, here's my fun question. You auditioned for American Idol, I believe, correct?
We did twice.
So which cat do you think would be the best American Idol judge?
Ooh, whoa. Shoot.
I think there are a couple of answers to this. I've thought about this a lot.
Who's the Simon Cowell of cats? Who's the Paula? Who's the Randy? I feel like the Paula is like Jenny Any Dots. Like, mm-hmm. she would just be so nice. And the Simon Cowell of cats. Ooh, maybe Grizz, because like she's the best singer ever, like in her mind, and everybody in Cats is great at singing, or should be. And but hers is like, she's just so bitter. Mm-hmm. She would be the bitter judge. And then Randy, that could be like Gus Growl Tiger.
Yeah, I think there's a couple that you eliminate. So I was like, I almost did this backwards. I was like, I don't think Tugger or Mistopheles or any of the kittens are probably thinking about it. So it's who are the adult cats. I do think you got, I had Simon as a little Old Deuteronomy-ish because I think Old Deuteronomy is making his decisions and kind of the leader and definitely in charge. And I, as this podcast is clear, I don't think he makes the right decision. So I'm like, Simon Cowell over here just doing whatever he feels. I think Paul and Jenny is right. I think that's probably the best parallel. I think you could maybe say Jelly too.
Yes.
And then Randy I had trouble with because I thought, to your point, I think it could be Gus. But Gus I always feel is older. Part of me had his little Bustopher Jones where it's like, I do have some money. I'm behind the scenes here. I'm going to be involved in this. But I feel like he's more of an executive producer of the show than he is anything else.
And he's played by whoever the Gus track is. So I think that whole, maybe I did mean Bustopher Jones. I was thinking Monk, but I'm like, because he's like super strong. But I'm like, no, Monk would audition. Monk wouldn't judge.
Yeah, and Skimbleshanks is like running the show. He's making sure the set's on time and everything's going.
He's the stage manager.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally. Oh my gosh, I love it. Yeah.
Okay, let's go to the final question. I've argued at length. I don't think Grisabella should be the right Jellicle choice. I want to hear if you want to defend Grisabella or if you want to defend a different cat.
I do. I mean, other than my fear of heights, it would have been really convenient if she wasn't the choice. That would have been great. But that's not how, Trevor Nunn and A.L. Dubs thought of it. Yeah, I defend it. I think that she, like I said earlier, has a tremendous arc in her character. And I mean, when you're Grisabella and when you're any of the cats, you line up and she, on her way to the heavy side, she has to shake hands with every single cat that was mean to her. And they are so happy for her in this moment. Like the animosity is gone. And they're sending her off in like heavenly heavy side layer bliss. And I just think she's been waiting for this for her whole cat life.
So here's my one gripe with this. I get the arc. I understand the choice. I feel like if she's being reaccepted by her family, why not let her spend the year with them and make her next year's choice?
I just think she's ripe.
So you don't think she's going to make it to next year?
I think she's I think she's earned it. I just feel like she, I don't think she's okay. I don't think she's the type to now go to everyone's birthday party for a year and dance with them and play with them and buy them Christmas gifts. And she's not like that.
Okay.
Like, she's done. That's my thing. Like, if she lasted one more year in the junkyard, I just don't see it for her. I see her, going straight up, to meet that layer in the sky, and she is ready. She's earned it.
You don't believe, so basically you don't believe she's the addict. You don't believe that she's going to rehabilitate for a year. It's like, no, she's being accepted right now. This is good. This is what the family needs and wants. Let's send her before there's another, she leaves again or there's any other issues, because she's not going to go to the birthday party. She's not going to do that.
I just don't think she's going to acclimate very well. And I think I also think she is so happy going up there. Another reason why I was not the right choice for this role, because I was crying, but for a different reason. And, death gripping onto the sides of this thing. You're supposed to, again, we're not on video, but you're supposed to just be in delight that mm-hmm. you're heading up there, and she is. And yeah, I just don't see her as one of the gang.
Okay, I could buy that. I think I can buy that part of it. I still have other challenges with this, but I understand that theory.
Yeah.
Well, this has been.
I don't see her hanging out in the back of D'Agostino's dumpster for a year.
She's not gonna. Yeah, I love that. She's not gonna go to birthday parties and family dinners and stuff. She's past that point. She's done and ready to move on.
She's done.
I love it. Well, this has been super fun. I appreciate you sharing your story and, you know, giving you know all of this, you know, backstory on what is, I'm sure, was probably very, you know, was a very challenging time, but also ends up mm-hmm. with you on Phantom, the end goal, which is the happy ending, I'm sure, and I know you wanted.
It was a very happy ending, and we just met such amazing people. We just we've celebrated weddings together, baby showers together, deaths together, we've grieved together. So it just, Cats creates a family, and I'm sure everyone says this, and it might sound cliche unless you've been in Cats, but there's nothing like it, and I really appreciate you having me on. This has been awesome.
Yeah, it's been amazing. How can people stay in touch with you and find you on social media or keep up with you?
So they can keep up with me. I'm private, but you can just request. It's at Kitty Heaton. That's my nickname on Instagram. And I also run a very near and dear nonprofit to me in honor of one of my sisters who passed away suddenly. And that would be at Maureen Heaton Foundation on Instagram or Facebook, and follow our mission, and you'll see me posting a lot.
I will link both of those for everybody in the episode. This has been amazing. So thank you again for being a guest.
Thank you. And Mike, this is awesome. I've never really told my story. So for all of you followers too, thank you for listening and giving me a space to chat.
Yeah. I'm glad that we were able to have you on. So thank you. And thanks everyone else to listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.